This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, we are live. It is Monday. It's the 18th of March. Oh, yay! So I found out this morning in just going around the room. Leanne.
Sorry, just stretching my knees.
Leanne brought out her machine and took a puff. Went.
It was my asthma pump.
Asthma. Sia said that he spent the weekend in Cape Town. Ben has a broken back. And listen, what happened to you people while I was away? An Ethiopian airline flight goes missing. Thanks very much for that.
Missing. Well, crash.
I know. Boom, horrible, bang. Horrible, horrible story. And then, as if that isn't bad enough, there's a mosque shooting in New Zealand. I mean, New Zealand. Nothing ever happens there. I cannot go away again because you guys can't keep things under control.
No. And then there are the cyclones.
Oh, my God.
Well, the one, which is hitting three countries simultaneously.
And then stage 11 load shedding.
That's been fun.
Oh, I arrived yesterday morning at 10:30 in the morning. I got off my plane. That means I haven't even been in the country for 24 hours right now, right?
You had a big smile on your face.
I got off the plane and I thought, oh, it's nice to be home. Five bouts of load shedding. Five. I went to sleep last night in utter darkness. I woke up this morning in utter darkness. I had to use the torch on the back of my phone to brush my teeth and get ready this morning. So if I look like shit, that's why.
Your eyes are sparkling. I think you might have brushed those instead.
Oh, my God. Maybe I did.
That sounds about right.
Five bouts of load shedding in less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
Do you know what that's doing to electronic equipment, to people whose businesses have geezers and things like that? It's going to burn them out. It's going to fuck them up completely.
Well, also, more people work and function from home and make money from home than in offices.
Yeah, that's actually true.
It affects your website. I mean, your Wi-Fi. It affects
everything.
Lighting.
So my point is that we've got an election coming up in, what, 2 months?
April,
it's about
May,
2 months.
Yes.
So how can, and I'd love to hear from an ANC supporter. I don't think a lot of them listen to us because they don't like to be told how crap they are. But I'd love to hear from an ANC supporter. How can you in good conscience go to the polls and vote for a party that cannot even keep the lights on? And I'm not saying you should vote for the DA, by the way. I don't like them at all. You know that. If you've listened to the show for more than 5 seconds, you'll know that I hate the whole lot of them. The EFF, the DA, the ANC, they're all, they're just monsters. They're monsters. These are career politicians, people who are trying to find a way for you to pay for their lifestyles. And they cannot even keep the lights on. I mean, if there isn't a more perfect metaphor for a government that has totally and abjectly failed its people, then this Eskom situation that we sit with at the moment now is. And we'll get into the news headlines a little later on. But I could not believe that I had been here for less than 24 hours when I woke up this morning and the fifth bout of load shedding had taken place.
Mm-mm.
That's just at my house. I can only imagine there are probably areas that it's worse. There are probably areas that's slightly better. But it's a disaster. This is a disaster. What do government say? They blame it on the cyclone in Mozambique.
And apparently that's only 5% of their production.
No, it's horse shit.
It's absolute horse shit.
Just the other day, they were blaming coal. Then they were blaming the Medupi and Kusile power plants that were filled with ash. Then they were blaming a lack of cash flow.
Lots of substation failures.
Yeah, there's always a different thing which makes me think that they are trying to find an excuse rather than trying to actually deal with the problem.
Yeah, then it's not like we're not getting paid enough. Then it's, we're not charging enough.
It's like the working part of Eskom is one office and the rest of the building is the excuse department.
Right, exactly. So I don't know what to make of this. I mean, I've been back in this South Shitholio, whatever we call our country now, for less than a day, and already I'm furious. I was having such a nice time. I had a great holiday. I was coming back. I was excited to get back to work, excited to hear from people who had some interesting stuff to say, and you know there were lots of stories while I was away that I was looking to get into. But this is what I'm faced with, and it's not just me, obviously. There are people who've been dealing with this every day for the last couple of days while I was away. And that must be even more infuriating. I mean, look, we can do nothing about it, right? Because this is absolutely 100% the government's fault. You cannot lay blame for this at anyone else's door. You can't say it's the people who are meant to be paying Eskom, because we all do, otherwise they cut off our power. You can't say that it's the guys in supply or whatever, because that should have been taken care of. The guys in charge of Eskom, these completely irresponsible Muppets who are in charge of Eskom, are the guys you can blame. And I'm sorry, like, for most people, that's just not acceptable. I don't understand how... Oh, let's just leave it. I actually don't even know what to say anymore.
You know,
like, you get back and this is what you have to deal with.
And there's still these Cyril Ramaphosa apologists left, right, and center.
If you're a big fan, if you're a Cyril Ramaphosa fan and you're running around talking about the new dawn and you're quoting Cyril's bullshit, I have to ask you if you're trapped in the adolescent stage of your life and you've never really matured beyond that. You're the rebellious child who's looking for a daddy. I've got to ask you with all honesty and sincerity that I can muster, how can you live your life hero worshipping someone who's so goddamned average? I had a dream. I had a dream.
Okay, Martin Luther King.
I had a dream the other day that Cyril was ousted. I don't know why I had this dream. It was just so real that David Mabuza, Didi Mabuza from Mpumalanga, who we know is the most rotten man in the current government, and Julius hatched a plan to unseat Cyril.
This is a very elaborate dream.
Yeah, it was a very elaborate dream.
Very detailed.
I watched the whole thing unfold, and Cyril just sat there with a mouthful of teeth, going, oh my God, the rug's been pulled out from under me. Because he's not doing anything. He's not arresting people. He's not chasing the public prosecutor to get people put in jail.
Right.
You saw that ANC list that came out last week. Now, I'm friends with one of the ANC MPs. We don't see a lot of each other, and we have nothing much to say to each other now. But he sent me an SMS with this, well, a WhatsApp with the ANC list saying, oh, this is our list. And I said to him, this is a crime scene. I think Zapira did a similar cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crime scene. Most of these people should be in jail. They should not be up for elected office. And he was so furious with me, he blocked me.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
I don't care. It's not the kind of friend I need to hold on to.
Well, if you listen to last week's Burning Platform, Pumi and Kanthan weren't mincing their words around the president. They think he'll last about 2 more years.
Yeah, and then he'll be recalled. Mm. This is the way of the ANC now. And then we'll be stuck with Didi Mabuza.
Oh, my goodness me. Good.
Yeah, look forward to that. That's
going
to be a real
one. In the land of the blind.
Sure.
Yes. That's always the thing, though. It's like Cyril's pretty weak. There's nothing really going on.
Totally
there.
Weak.
But he is the best of the bunch. Oh, what a bunch.
Yeah. All right. But let's. I didn't want to start this morning on a negative slant. There's so much good stuff to talk about, too. I had an amazing holiday. I think I'm getting a cold.
Which was bound to happen. Half of course with airplanes.
Yeah, it was the airplane because I was fine when I left France. And I felt fine on the plane. I arrived yesterday morning and I was feeling healthy as can be. I started coughing a little bit in the afternoon. And then last night, in the middle of load shedding, I woke up and I was freezing cold. You know how you get like the chills?
Your core body temperature is dropped.
So I went and grabbed a blanket, which I haven't had to use the whole of summer. Grabbed a blanket out of the cupboard and I crawled under my little blankie. And
your doo-doo blanket.
And I was schwitzing. And, you know, it was such a heavy blanket. It felt like I was moving mountains just to be under it. Like every time I moved, I was like, oh, this is such an effort.
Like those new sort of comfort blanket things that are weighted.
Yes. Yeah, I've got, this is like a normal, it's a, you know, one of those things, it's almost like a throw, really.
Mm.
It's not even a blanket. But I'm so unused to sleeping under heavy blankets. You know, most of the summer, we don't even, I mean, I don't know about you, but I sleeping under sheets enough for me.
Yeah, I'm still sleeping with a fan on.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Are you cold, Sia?
Last time was hot. Last time was like humid hot.
No, yeah, well, I felt like I was in the Arctic.
Oh, no, I use 3 different covers every night.
No, it's too
tell
much.
Tell us about these 3 covers. This is a this
what,
is
what color good. And what texture are there?
Come on.
I feel claustrophobic already.
Go on, Sia.
I need a good snuggulation of the situation. I use a basic comforter. Then I need like a...
What's his name?
Derek the comforter.
Yes. Derek the comforter. Can you imagine if you called your comforter Derek? And he went, Derek.
Yeah, Derek.
Then I do have just a simple blanket. Then I also have a throw as well.
No.
That I snuggle with.
It's too much. What are you going to do in winter?
My three covers and my, I'll say, at least 6 pillows.
No.
Oh, no. You guys, I don't
know. I have
where
one of those pillows that support your neck. So it's like very, it's not cushy at all. It's like a plank. That. Sometimes a nightie, sometimes not.
Yes.
What do you, like and a nightgown?
A nightgown?
A nightgown or nightdress?
A nightdress, yeah.
A nightdress, frilly.
then and then lacy. The fan. It's
like, is it lacy and frilly?
I do have some of those. Oh. I save them for when I'm in the mood.
Oh, right, when you feel for like prancing around your house on your own in your nightie. All right, that sounds a lot more sensible than Sia's arrangement.
Oh, no, anyway, mine works. All right, a couple
of things. Yeah, I'll tell you about the holiday in a second. Let's just get to the messages. So Sean says, I don't even blame the ANC. I blame each and every past, present, and ANC voter. No respect for anyone who votes ANC. Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I'm asking, right? And then someone has sent me pictures of some property that they obviously think, you know, Leanne or I or Ben or you might want to buy, Sia.
Okay.
Pictures of this property somewhere.
Wow.
This person is really spamming us with, like, there's a gym in this building.
It's a lot of pictures.
I think it's in Cape Town. There's a nice little dining room.
Well, on Friday we were getting dissected rats.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's nice. What did you ask for to get dissected rats?
Nothing. Oh. Stem cell treatment. Suddenly this guy was saying, we're getting stem cell treatmenting with rats.
Yeah, just don't even get me started. A friend of mine was telling me yesterday on this WhatsApp group I'm on that her sister-in-law is an anti-vaxxer. You know, I've started to get just a little bit more than slightly pissed off by the fact that everybody thinks they're entitled to an opinion, even when they're totally ignorant.
But they also just want to have an opinion.
Yeah, they want to have an opinion because that's what gets you cachet on social media. So if they have an opinion, especially if it's a, you know, slightly controversial one, then that's going to get them the attention they so desperately want that they never got from the people.
Flat earthers, anti-vaxxers, yeah. Those people who apologize for pastors and the ANC.
Yeah, they're all in the same WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
So I'll get down that street another time. But Quentin in Namibia says, welcome back, Don Jr. I don't know what that means. Am I like Don Jr.? Am I like Donald Trump's son? The douchebag son who hunts animals in Africa?
No, definitely not.
I don't understand.
Like, explain, Quentin. I mean, I'm happy to take some criticism. Off today, 6 to 8, and then again for 4 hours, 2 to 6, and then again from 10. I've been up since 4 trying to get my workday started. How am I supposed to be profitable and get ahead with my business? I'm over it.
See?
What stage of load shedding will we have on election day? Says B in Cape Town. Yeah, that's a very good point. I really just don't think that we're letting ANC voters know to the degree that we can that every fuck up in their lives is as a result of the people they keep voting for. And I know that a lot of people say, oh, but you know, ANC voters are not stupid. They're bound to the organization by loyalty and all this sort of thing. There has to be a point where if your father keeps fingering you, you eventually don't go home.
That's spot on, really.
You know what I mean? I mean, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, when your uncle keeps on trying to rape you every time you walk past the house, you've got to stop visiting that uncle.
Yeah.
I think he's still being far too kind with it. Everyone who goes out and votes, or if you so enthusiastically support a party, you must know the repercussions of it.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the same for an EFF supporter. DA is slightly different. Like, I have no passion for them at all, but I don't think that they're criminals. I don't think they're crooks who are ruining the country. They haven't had a chance to.
Yeah, they haven't had a chance yet to.
But in the Western Cape, they seem to have, by and large, and I think it was Helen Ziller who was responsible for this, they ran the place pretty damn well. That's not to say I want to vote for them.
But well, they're the only people to vote because they're going to cut the cabinet in half and they want you to own your own stuff.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a good enough start.
Could we stop this bullshit of, like, I have no passion? No one's got passion for politics, Gareth. They're a bunch of dickwads.
Well, funnily enough, yesterday, Ramon from the Renegade Report and Canthan Pillay, who's our regular Burning Platform host, launched their own political party.
Nice. There's democracy
right
now.
Well.
Now, I knew that this was in the works, but I couldn't say anything because it's really their project. I'm not involved in any way. It makes me a little bit uncomfortable because I don't want to be seen to be supporting any party, and I'm going to, by association with these two, end up looking like I'm supporting them and I'm funding them or I'm helping them or I'm giving them publicity or whatever. But I want you to know I'm not involved, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So these guys are starting a capitalist party of South Africa.
Sounds good already.
Their symbol is the purple cow. Purple is the color of wealth and the color of success and the color of prosperity.
Sexual frustration.
The royals. Bonnie. But it's also the cow in South Africa is a symbol of wealth. And the cow is the symbol of rural wealth. And for many people, it's the only way that you can attribute value to something is by how many cows it's worth. It's an economy that's uniquely South African. And the the party, as far as I understand, are a party of the free market, free speech. They don't care about social issues. They're not interested in those. Like, they're not going to interfere in, like, gay marriage or abortion or any of that stuff. It's none of their business. They said they're only getting involved in subjects that they can do something about. So, like, the economy. They want to legalize prostitution and weed because they think that that's holding us back, and I agree. They want to get things working in terms of the police. And there have been a whole lot of videos they've been sending out over the last little while. I think this is exciting. I'm not saying I'm going to vote for them. I'm not saying I'm excited about it from a personal point of view, because politics is really, to me, I've lost all love for politics. And I'm someone who's always talked about politics, mm-hmm. always been interested. I have no love left for it. But congratulations to these guys. You know,
Canton, so they'll be ready to rock and roll by these elections.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got a list of candidates, all of them. Not one is a politician. So they're all people who run their own businesses or work somewhere, or you know, they get their income from something other than politics, and they're running. If they can get 500,000 votes, they'll get 10 seats in parliament. And don't tell me this crap about how, oh, if you waste a vote on a smaller party like that, that it's a waste. It's not. The EFF had, I think, 8 seats in the beginning, maybe a little more. That's made a difference. The EFF have kind of led the ANC by the nose in parliament. Mm.
So it's literally started very recently, if you look at the full landscape.
They started the 5 years ago.
Yeah, and they started from nothing.
Julius started his political party when I started this business. And he's doing very well. So there's no reason to believe.
He's doing very well.
Yeah, sure. His supporters are not. But then, I mean, they're still stuck in infancy trying to get stuff for free. That's what happens if you vote EFF. You're trying to get things for free. Anyway, so that's exciting. And actually, Lubabalo is the one who reminded me to talk about this, because he says, I have a party to vote for, and its leader is our Burning Platform host. Yeah, so look, I don't know if this means that we have to change the Burning Platform, because we can't really have someone who's partisan doing the Burning Platform. Yeah, we can have him as a guest, like we had the Freedom Front guy and the ACDP dude and the Tswane Meyer and all of these things. But I think maybe we've got to look at changing the Burning Platform. A lot of people, big fans of Canthans, but I don't know.
Maybe you can make coffee and, you know,
yeah, sure.
A couple of things.
Hang around, yeah. Sure, that's nice of you, Leanne. Redeploy him.
As you said yesterday at the launch, it's time to put an end to the tyranny of incompetence.
Yeah. Ooh.
What a succinctly beautiful line to where we are right now.
Yeah, it is. It's the tyranny of incompetence. That's what the ANC
that
is.
Exactly it. That's all we have to focus on.
So we've got Anthea popping by this morning, so she'll give us an overview of the economy and what's happening with Brexit and African Rainbow Capital Investments. That's Patrice's company, PwC. There's lots going on there. But yeah, so I had a great holiday. I went off to Alpe d'Huez in France, which is just this magnificent town at the top of the French mountains. It's
that road gorgeous. Going up there is quite something.
Well, that's the road. You will know about this, Ben, because you pay attention to these things. And I didn't know it when we were on our way up. But that's the road, the famous road that the Tour de France goes up.
Yeah, it doesn't go every year, but it's one of the big fixtures.
It's the hardest stage of the Tour de France, according to most people.
Yeah. I was there when I
ascend something like 3,000 meters.
It's crazy, and the switchbacks in the roads are so repetitive.
Yeah.
And they're so narrow, and you think, like, how do you get a bike up here?
Try and drive up there. I mean, because a car's even bigger. And coming down, there are buses and... I mean, I was delayed. We left the town at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. My flight was at 4. I missed it. That's how long it took us to come down, and there was so much traffic. So I had to book another flight. Sure. So it was really, really scary, just in terms of how much traffic was up there. And I mean, there were 30,000 people in that town for this Tomorrowland winter. It was spectacular. The festival itself was beautiful. It was the one night was very cold. The rest was okay. But there was a blizzard the one night. Like, you
can't go out.
If you stood outside for 5 minutes, I had like a helmet of snow on. If I stood outside for 5 minutes on that one night. The rest was beautiful. It was clear and lovely, and the days were sunny. But the snow was unreal that one night. And they all went ahead, and people were standing in the snow, and you know, like thousands of people just having a party and living it up and being part of it. I've never been to a festival like that. I've never done any. It wasn't even on my agenda. These friends of mine were going, and I thought, well, you know what? I'll just attach myself and let's see how it goes. Mm. wanted to do some skiing, which I did. It was beautiful. And it's just such a different kind of a holiday to anything we have in South Africa. We don't have snow. We don't have those kinds of mountains.
It's an atmosphere thing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, you've got these bars with people partying well into the early hours of the morning. You've got people skiing all day. It's very healthy, actually, because you spend the whole day skiing.
Did you then get to rest?
You party at night. Not really, no. Not really. It was a nonstop thing, and that's probably why I'm tired. It was amazing, though. Just amazing. Like, such cool people. I have to say, though, weird thing, a funny observation we all made, me and all the people I was there with, not that attractive a group of people.
It's,
oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, the girls and the guys, very ugly people. I thought, you know, that these kinds of festivals would attract, you know, nice-looking people.
Well, and they're from all over the world.
The hottest people there were the two South African girls we were with.
That goes to show that the summer people, they spend all the winter getting into summer.
Yeah, clearly.
The good-looking people were at gym.
The good-looking people are going through that metamorphosis to look good by summer.
Listen, I lost 3.5 kilograms, talking about gym, skiing.
Just shivering.
No, well, from just, shivering.
You dress appropriately. So you're wearing, when you fall in the snow a couple of times.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I hurt my ass so many times falling on it.
I see you've got a graze on your...
Well, that was from in town, because there's icy, the snow, the black ice on the roads.
Oh, yeah.
And I was wearing a pair of sneakers, which is a stupid thing to do. I had a pair of boots there, but I didn't put them on. And then you walk, and you just feel your feet go out from under you, and you just go, boom. And I scratched my forearm pretty badly.
That's an anar.
Yeah, it's not good. Anyway, it'll be all right. Just great. Anyway, nice holiday. Feel like I've had a proper break.
Yeah.
And ready to get stuck into the new year. Do you want to get to the 5 things you need to know today?
Yes, please.
All right.
Getting stuck into the new year as the first quarter wraps up.
Well, that's what I mean, because it's almost April. I mean, certainly the summer's over. Like, now it's definitely, you know, we're in autumn and things have changed and you can feel the temperatures dropping. So Ramaphosa has deployed an army to Mozambique to help with recovery efforts. I don't know if Mozambique really want our help. They haven't been asked. If they see our army, once they cross the border to come in inverted commas, help, they might send them home. But Cyril has deployed the South African National Defense Force to Mozambique to assist with recovery efforts after the country was hit by a tropical cyclone. About 140 people are dead. Hundreds are still missing after the cyclone Idia hit Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi. Leanne was telling me this morning the Prime Minister's wife had to, like, climb a tree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said last week to Ben, you know, we were warned of this approaching cyclone. And I said to him, well, you know, these sort of storms, especially in Mozambique, never go down well. Yeah. And I thought of that woman who gave birth in the tree, and that girl's now, 21 years old. And then this tree thing, the Prime Minister's...
Mozambique, it's really helpful to have a tree.
The PM's wife climbing the tree, she said she would have been dead if she didn't. She had to climb a tree near her house.
Well, Gareth, the ability to climb said tree may be slightly more important.
Yeah, have you tried lately?
I haven't climbed a tree for a long time. I think I'd be screwed. The ANC in Gauteng has said two rival taxi associations in Soweto have finally reached an agreement. Comes after a government gazette was published, article was published, effectively shutting down some of the taxi routes due to dispute between the Witwatersrand African Taxi Association and the Nansfield Dube West Group. I mean, you must understand, you probably think, you listen to these stories about these taxi associations, you think, this sounds silly, this is a little thing. These are very powerful organizations. And the guys who run them are gangsters. And they control how everybody in southern Johannesburg gets to and from work. They control major aspects of the traffic. They control major aspects of the supply and production routes for so many of these places because of the staff that they ferry to and fro.
And they're very people. Intimidating
very,
as well.
Very intimidating. So the party says, though commuters were affected by the fights, it supports government's decision to halt operations in response. So expect a lot of people saying that they can't get to and from work, like they might have the rest of the week or the previous week. Pravin has met with Eskom, the board and management, as the rolling blackouts continue. Who's excited about little old Pravin? Oh. Imagine that doddering little man walking into the room and trying to take control. Well, hello everybody, I'm here to try and take control. I mean, it's just unbelievable, right? His little wispy bit of white hair at the back of his bald head.
No.
So here he is. the minister said officials from his department were briefed on the financial and restructuring issues facing the struggling power. Struggling? Failed. I don't think you could call it struggling. It has failed. Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan says he agrees with South Africans. Oh, that the continuation of recurrent load shedding, in particular stage 4 load shedding, is unacceptable and disruptive to the economy. Wow, Pravin, do you really agree with us?
That's bold.
Wow, so brave. So bold. He said officials from his department had met with Eskom's board and management, where they were briefed on the financial and restructuring issues. Comes as Eskom implemented stage 4 load shedding on Sunday, which was expected to last until 11 p.m. Well, it's lasted a lot longer than about you, but I woke up in the dark this morning. The power producer said two lines that supply power from Cahora Bassa in Mozambique had gone offline as a result of tropical cyclone Idai, which contributed significantly to load shedding being escalated from stage 3 to 4. That Cahora Bassa thing was built by the apartheid government, right? So, again, we're going to look at this thing, and then, you know, Helen Ziller gets into shit when she tweets that we could learn a lot from colonialism, like in Singapore. Mm-hmm. But here we're talking about, oh, well, half the reason you've got stage 4 load shedding is because of Cahora Bassa Dam and that whole line being interrupted. Well, again, there wouldn't be this problem. We wouldn't have the power that we have from Cahora Bassa if it wasn't for the apartheid government. Throw the baby out with the bathwater, why don't we? Eskom announced it would be implementing a full day of stage 4 load shedding on Monday from 9 a.m. to 2300 due to the shortage of capacity. So, the less said about those assholes, the better.
And again, I've got this from a good source. That whole Mozambican thing is 5% of power out. 5%.
I just don't believe anything Eskom say anymore. I don't believe.
Well, either do they. I don't believe. They really don't.
Nobody does. And then Facebook has said it removed 1.5 million videos of the New Zealand mosque attack. I don't know whether that's a good thing. I'll tell you why. I haven't seen it. I don't like watching actual people dying in real time on a recording. I've never liked that. I know in a movie when they shoot someone, it's a movie.
Mm.
I don't like watching actual death happen. I've never liked...
Like snuff films.
Yeah, I don't like those videos people send on WhatsApp where someone gets pulled into a machine and, you know, horrible shit happens. But I do have to say that the absolute horror of this thing probably needs to be seen. You know, just like... And I'm going to draw parallel with what happened in America at that synagogue. Do you remember where this crazy guy burst into a synagogue and shot everyone in there?
Yeah.
It was called the Tree of Life Synagogue. Do you remember? And it really upset me. And similarly, I'm very upset by this mosque attack in New Zealand. And Facebook are removing this stuff because they obviously are trying to protect people. But I don't know whether people need to be protected from this, because I get the distinct feeling that there are a lot of people who are growing up thinking that the world around them is a movie, and maybe seeing what's actually happening will give them a bit of a wake-up call. We'll make them realize what the nature of hatred and what the nature of evil is. You know, we've got people who are coddled, they're sent to university, they are led to believe that the world is their oyster and they can achieve anything, and they can be anything they want to be, and there are no more dangers for people in the world because they don't have to go to the army or any of that stuff. I'm talking about young people. But then social media sanitizes itself for them as well, so they don't have to be offended, they don't have to be upset, they don't have to be hurt, they don't have to see the real ugliness of some parts of the world and some kinds of people. And I'm wondering if that's always a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, think of the people in those situations who are watching it every day.
Yeah. I mean, people talk, you know, I've heard like UCT students telling me, oh, what's going on in Syria? And I say to them, what is going on in Syria? And then they can't tell me because they're really only hearing the headlines. They're not actually doing the research. They're not looking at the footage. They're not reading the op-eds. They're not talking to sources inside of Syria. Mm. And they want me to think that they've got all that under their belt, but they don't. They have no idea what's going on in Syria, but it sounds good if they say it's terrible what's happening in Syria. It's like a lot of people will say, oh, it's terrible what's happened in this mosque. They won't get into it. They won't get into the detail of it. And I do find that upsetting. I think it's deeply hypocritical. I think that this kind of thing does happen. It's rare, thank God, which is why it's such an awful story, because if it was happening all over the world all the time, we wouldn't be as sensitive to it as we clearly are. And I don't think I've read any statements from anyone who hasn't said it's an awful thing. I mean, I've really looked far and wide to find someone who said, oh, no, this is great, you know. Well, this is what people in that mosque deserve. No one, as I've seen it, has said anything like that.
There was the incident of the egging. Did you see that?
I saw that. Right. But
so there are people who are saying stuff that's angering everyone else in the situation.
Well, this is the PM, right? Fraser.
Fraser Anning.
Yeah.
But he's the Senator of Queensland or something.
Oh, so he's not the Prime Minister. Sorry, that's quite right. He's the Senator. But he's an Australian.
Yes.
Yeah.
And apparently one of the gunmen was an Australian.
Well, yeah.
Am I right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, the gunman was, yeah.
So this guy got egged by some slacktivist.
A 17-year-old boy.
Yeah, this guy was standing with his phone filming this, and he cracked an egg on the Prime Minister or the Senator's head.
Or he turned around with a glup.
And this guy was like, he's an adult man. If a 17-year-old cracks an egg on my head, I'm going to punch his fucking lights out.
Yeah.
That's how it works. There is a cost for having an opinion. This goes back to what we were saying earlier. If you're going to have an opinion, you're going to be an activist, there might be some violence. You might have to deal with some ugliness. In other words, it's not for free. Having an opinion is not for free. There are going to be costs, even if you're a nobody on social media. So a lot of people are saying they're with this kid. A lot of people are saying they're with the senator. I just think whatever the senator said, if you crack an egg on his head, he's going to be able to retaliate any way he sees fit, short of killing you, which would be a bit extreme. But if someone cracked an egg on your head, wouldn't you attack them?
Mm. Well, you definitely react.
Well, you're going to stand there?
You're not going to stand there and go, oh, thank you, I needed that.
A real man would hit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, that's terrible. It's toxic masculinity and all this shit. If you've ever been responsible for someone else's safety, if you've ever had to defend a woman who's in peril, if you've ever had kids that were in danger and you're a man, you have to sometimes resort to fisticuffs to get the problem sorted out. And if you haven't done any of those things, it's easy for you to stand on the sidelines and say, oh, toxic masculinity. And if someone cracked an egg on my head, you better believe I'd punch their lights out. And I'm not a violent guy. I don't think that's the real story here anyway. I think the real story is the mosque. This kid's made it all about him. Typical millennial. Or Generation Z, or whatever you want to call him. All right, let's get into some sport with Ben, see what's going on over there. Ben, what do you have for us?
Well, Gareth, Rory McIlroy finally won something big, the wrap of the weekend's football, and the Crusaders might be looking to change their name in Super Rugby. Let's start with that Super Rugby then. So the Crusaders are meant to play the Highlanders. The Crusaders, of course, from Christchurch, and they decided they weren't going to play. So the game is cancelled.
Because of what happened at the mosque.
Yeah, both teams get 2 points. And the Crusaders are saying, well, they're not going to do anything. There's no knee-jerk reaction towards this, but they are considering changing their name now because the Crusaders obviously being, well, Gareth, you can elaborate on what the Crusaders were back in the day. Not particularly
It's not a great name for a team. Yeah. I mean, the Crusades were basically, you know, it's a religious war.
Yeah.
So there were three of them.
So the Crusaders themselves say, you know, it's the whole crusade for dignity and togetherness and all that other kind of crap. But no, there's guys coming out on horses and chainmail. It's pretty much the Crusaders, as in the bad Crusaders. Yeah. So, look, this thing, like when you're a professional sporting unit, you have to be socially conscious of everything that's happening around you. You're not just a rugby team. You are representative of a place in the world. So you can see how this is going to come into effect. Just be so interesting to see what they would call themselves. Because Christchurch believers, Christchurch kings.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, I was in France, and everything in France is Catholic. The part of France that I was in, there's a church in every town, and there are crosses up on the walls, and people are very Christian and very Catholic. It's part of the culture of that part of France. And I would imagine that a place called Christchurch, founded by people who were quite religious... You can't go around now sanitizing that either. It's like Facebook pulling these videos down. You're kind of trying to hide history because it embarrasses you.
Yeah,
you have to face up to this stuff.
Well, facing up to this stuff was exactly what the Lions did over the weekend. They were under the gun, as they say. They were about 20 points behind the Rebels. They came back after Swayze lost it with his players. Swayze, the coach, of course. And after flicking them, no doubt, for about 5 minutes, they came back and won 36-33.
Swayze.
Late penalty there, and they win by three. It's a very good result for them. The Sunwolves, I don't know how they threw this away. I mean, this was borderline match fixing how diabolical this became. But they could have easily beaten the Reds. They just decided they were not going to tackle anymore, and the Reds won 34-31. The Stormers were way too convincing against the Hakawalith on Friday night in Cape Town, 35-8 the score there. The Brumbies beat the Waratahs 19-13. And the Chiefs, well, they were having an absolute dogshit season. They still are. Everything was against them, but they managed a plucky draw against the Hurricanes.
I like that, plucky.
Plucky draw.
Yeah.
23-23. Boom. Look at that. In the Six Nations, Wales are the Six Nations champions. They're just too good. They absolutely shut out Ireland 25-7. Ireland 7 came very late in the game. Just an incredible result this, really, because they have been so good. Up until the end of last year, everyone was like, hang on a second, Wales actually don't lose many games. Then, poor man's Ricky Gervais, Warren Gatland, said, okay, well, maybe we can win the Six Nations from here.
Yep.
And look at that, they have. And at a canter as well.
Very good.
Far too strong for Ireland there, 25-7. Huh. And then Scotland, they were 31 points down in the second half against England, and they drew 38-38. Scintillating rugby there in the second half. And earlier on, nobody watched this one, but Italy lost 14-25 to France. Those two teams basically, I mean, you can maybe have the Four Nations, because those two teams just do not actually contest whatsoever.
Drove past a bus in Grenoble of the Grenoble rugby team, and I suddenly thought, you know, Ben would probably know this. There are probably more South Africans in that bus than Frenchmen.
Probably. Definitely so. Yeah, so France rugby is where it is, has been for the last few years, and that, of course, is the toilet. Now, Valtteri Bottas, he won the Australian GP, sporting a lovely contoured beard. There he is, beating Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. So Ferrari, again, they promise so much in testing, deliver so little on the track. So Bottas is the first person to get the maximum points. So now in F1, because every year they had to change something. One of these days they're just going to call it something different because they run out of things to change. But you get a bonus point if you have the fastest lap recorded in the race.
Oh.
So Bottas had the fastest lap, he'll get an extra driver's championship point.
Race.
Oh, how cool is that? Rory McIlroy, this guy, we all know he's phenomenal. He's just sensational, but then he just doesn't know how to putt. Or he has absolute brain farts on the golf course. Well, yesterday, he actually won the Players' Championship, which is a huge result for him. Despite only recording back-to-back 70s on the weekend, things did get a bit tougher for the players, and he was just too good for everyone. He was one shot ahead of Jim Furyk, who miraculously was in contention this last weekend. The ex-Ryder Cup captain was pretty much the only Yank who was really making much of a charge. Dustin Johnson had a really good round. He had another 69 on Sunday, as did Brandt Snedeker. And Eddie Pepperell came back with 66, as did Venezuelan Jonathan Vegas. No South Africans in the mix there. But in the Kenyan, the magical Kenyan Open, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Migliozi Guido won.
I know him.
Balls of steel by winning by one. And Justin Harding finished second again, so he might now be vaulted into the top 15 in the world, which means he goes to Augusta to play the Masters. And in 24 days' time, I think that is. Incredible. This guy's season just goes on and on and on. He picked up 82,000 euros, so that's like 1.3 million rand. Just making bank all over the place. Just killing it. The Proteas have a T20 squad after annihilating Sri Lanka 5-0. What an absolute farce of a series that was. Sri Lanka were just dog shit the whole time. And the series ended with a power, the floodlight basically not working at Newlands. So they had to come off because of power. So that was 5-0. But now they're going to three T20s. And Sinathembe Shele is coming into the team. Now, he is a phenomenal batsman and wicketkeeper. What are you laughing at, Sia?
No, I'm listening to Sinathembe.
What are you laughing at?
Nothing.
Did I mispronounce that?
Mm-mm.
I don't know why you're laughing.
Nothing.
Sia knows him.
Anrik Nokia, he's also in here, and so is Aidan Markram.
Oh.
Yeah. But now, there's two squads essentially. So those are your debutants, but the first T20 sees very much the ODI team being rung through one more time just to put some finishing touches on selections. And then the second and third KFC T20 will have new players coming in, which obviously is more about the T20 realm. So after this, then we'll know exactly who's going to the World Cup. But essentially, the matches will take place from Tuesday, and then again on Friday, and then again on Sunday. Cape Town have the first one. Sibbiespoon Park Centurion will have the second, and then the Wanderers will have the third on Sunday. It'll be a daytime game. The rest are all in the evening, electricity pending. And finally, in the football of the weekend, well, there wasn't much happening in the Premier League because there was FA Cup matches, plus there were a whole bunch of postponed matches, but Liverpool beat Fulham 2-1, and Everton hammered Chelsea 2-0. That does mean that Liverpool go top of the log, but it'll only be for the time being because they've got one game more than anyone else. Cape Town City drew Polokwane City 0-0, but Wits had the big result over the weekend. They beat Bloemfontein Celtic 4-2 to remount their title challenge, as it were. Oh, SuperSport United drew with Kaizer Chiefs. And then in the FA Cup, basically Brighton are going to be playing Man City in the semi-finals. They beat Millwall.
Yeah.
No reports about how big the fight was after that, but I'm sure it was quite big. And then Watford beat Crystal Palace, and then they'll now take on Wolves because Wolves beat Man United.
Excellent.
And that is pretty much it for your sport on the Monday.
Thank you very much, Ben. Over to Anthea, who's here for the Money Shot. All right, Anthea, take it away.
She works hard for the money, so hard for it, honey. She works hard for the money, so you better treat her right.
Yes, two friends of Anthea sent that in for us.
Ooh, look at that.
Isn't that nice, huh? Isn't that really cool?
9 a.m.
All right, okay, thank you, honey. All right,
so
very nice.
Pretty.
So, how are you, Anthea?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. I had a very good time. You ski, right?
Oh, I love skiing.
Oh, it's the best.
Isn't it?
Once you get in, like, the first day I was useless because I was way too ambitious and thought I could go fast and had a couple of falls. Plus, the conditions were shit on the first day. It was snowing quite a lot. There was very poor visibility. It was icy. The best. But, yeah, by the second day I was good.
Okay, and then you get into your stride. It does take a while, before a day or two, before you kind of get used to that feeling of being on the snow. And
yeah, it's the best. Weird. It is such a weird feeling. All right, so back to important stuff. Let's get into the ugly situation that is Brexit. I know a lot of people are tired of talking about Brexit. I know a lot of people are so confused as to what actually is going on there. But what is the status quo at the moment, and what impact does it have on people's money?
Okay, so on, I forget the dates exactly, but it was Tuesday they had a vote that went through, and then I think it was Wednesday or Thursday they had to vote again to whether or not to delay it and go to the EU to delay Brexit, because the actual date was 29th of March and they're obviously not going to meet it. And I think what will happen now is that the EU, well, I think it already has said it's fine, they will delay Brexit. That's basically
as I understand
what's
the EU,
going on.
The EU aren't exactly making it easy for Britain to,
why
to
should
do
they?
This. Well, this is the point, right? Because they need that British taxpayers' money to keep the EU bureaucracy afloat.
I'm not sure they do need the British taxpayers'
money. Aren't the British part of the biggest block of payers?
Sure, but they can do without it. There's not a...
Yeah, because, of course, you know, Bulgaria produces so much revenue.
Okay, yeah, sure.
You know what I mean.
I get your point. Yes, yeah. I know exactly. But basically what happened...
Right. Sorry, hold on. Let's just all check if Leanne's okay.
Ooh, that felt good.
Wow. All right. Sure. All right. Back to you, Anthea.
And that's
sorry.
What she thinks of Brexit.
Yeah.
But basically what happened on Thursday is that now it's a reset. So everything can start from zero again. They can have another referendum. I mean, it's just ridiculous, actually. They can have another vote of no confidence. We're back to square one.
Why can't they just do this? The British people have said they want out.
And they should, right?
Yes.
I don't know what the delay is. I don't know what the problem is. And clearly, they've changed their minds, realized that it was a problem. They shouldn't have voted for Brexit.
But this is Remainers who are trying to scupper the plans that were voted for. Like, you can't turn around and change the rule that people in a referendum decided they were going to get out.
Do you not think that the Remainers are... Oh, how do I say this without sounding snobbish? Slightly more intellectual than the Brexiteers.
I think that the Remainers are an intellectual elite.
Yeah,
and I think
that's
that they consider themselves to be no better than the ordinary people. And I'm sorry, that's not how democracy works. Mm-hmm. If you like democracy, if you believe in democracy, you can't say, oh, well, we know better, so we're going to override that. And if you don't believe in democracy, sure, then, you know, say it's an oligarchy. And say we've got this group of people who know better than you We'll let them decide.
It'll be interesting to see what happens if they do have another referendum, whether or not Britain will vote for another Brexit. I mean, surely, after all this, you think so?
Yeah.
You
think they'll vote for it in even bigger numbers.
Oh, okay. That'd be interesting. All right, and then back home, Group 5, the construction company, filed for bankruptcy protection on Tuesday. Yep. Cash crunch was the issue. They're trying to stave off their lenders. Basically, they're saying, I know, it's sad.
Group 5 is easily one of the biggest construction companies in South African history.
Definitely.
Very successful business.
On the continent.
Yeah, built most of the bridges and buildings and, you know, it's a huge engineering firm.
And one of the issues, in fact, was that they ran into cash flow problems at the end of last year when the Ghanaian SenPower Generation Company made a $62 million claim about delays in the power plant build, and they've since terminated the project. But really, Group 5 are saying it's the local economy mostly. Stagnant growth, economic growth, and a pullback in infrastructure spend by government and private companies
South
Africa.
I hate to say it, but this is the new reality of Cyril's South Africa. And in a country where we can't provide power for companies, there are going to be a lot of others that will file for bankruptcy now. There are a lot of other companies that will have to lay off workers. We're going to have a very big headache for the next couple of months.
I in fact, read about two companies yesterday, small companies, unlisted, that had to close doors because of the electricity shortages in South Africa at the moment.
Well,
so it's happening already.
So Pravin, in all of his meetings with Eskom, he better realize the severity of all of this.
Yeah. And we also had mining and manufacturing data out last week sometime. And that's also such an indictment on what's happening. Manufacturing output rose by 0.3%, which is basically flat.
Yeah.
And then mining production declined by 3.3%, which is very depressing. You know, we are a commodities mining country still, and so we do depend on it. And such a shame, because 2 weeks ago we were talking about the current account deficit in, I think it was February we were looking at, and that how it wasn't great because it was a deficit, the balance was a deficit, but two sectors that kind of held it up, financials, so banking, investments, and mining were the other ones. And mining really was because we were exporting commodities and the commodity prices had rallied. And if we can't take advantage of high commodity prices, where does that leave us? Like, it's terrible. It's a shock.
So let's just talk quickly about Exxaro.
Another mining company.
And about African Rainbow Capital Investments, because they come out of a mining company.
Indeed. So Exxaro is the coal miner. Fantastic result. I mean, really unbelievable result. I don't know if you remember last year, they paid a special dividend, and their total dividend for last year was 23.90 rand or somewhere around there.
Per share.
Yes, per share. This year, they reported post-tax profits of 7.1 billion rand, up from last year's 6 billion rand. Mm-hmm. And I think, Saleo is our mining analyst, and him and I were talking about this the other day when the results came out. The only subsidiary of Exxaro's that didn't perform really was Sishen, which is the iron ore company. But even they paid 2.6 billion rand in dividends up to the holding company.
Wow.
And kind of Exxaro's dividend policy or cash flow policy is that they will pay that anything they get from Sishen directly to the shareholders.
Wow.
And we're thinking there could be another 24 rand in total dividends this year.
Very
so if
nice.
You have Exxaro shares, hold on to them.
Okay. Yeah. How about Patrice?
So, this was African Rainbow Capital Investments. It's different from African Rainbow Minerals.
Sure.
It, as you're right, though, it was born out of the mining company, but this is his investment holding company. And they do have some mining, but it's small in this investment holding company. The real kind of holding and their big money spinners, Rain, Time, they have an 8% holding in Alexander Forbes. They've bought We Buy Cars, or I think 30% of We Buy Cars. So kind of nice diversified portfolio. So because it's a holding investment company, we don't look at operations or operational margins or EBITDA, that sort of thing. We look at net asset value or intrinsic net asset value.
Sure.
And it rose from 9.12 rand last year to 9.20 rand. So they're saying the net asset value, if you add up all the assets that they hold, equals 9.20 rand a share. The share is trading at a 45% discount.
So you're saying we should buy some?
Oh, we definitely should buy some. Not because it's necessarily because it's trading at a discount, because all investment holding companies tend to trade at a discount for... They take into consideration management fees and roll up of cash flow and that sort of thing, all sorts. But I'm saying you should buy these shares because even though they have valued their assets at 9.20 a share, we think they're conservatively valuing their assets. So Rain, for example, well, let's talk about Time first, Time Bank. Remember we spoke about the trading statement 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Right.
And we were saying how from start to finish, from opening, like starting to do your bank account, to getting a bank card, 3 minutes, 30 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. So you walk into the Spick and Pay kiosk, you go to the little Time kiosk, and you put in your FICA docs, and 3 minutes and 30 seconds later, you have a card.
So this is foreseeably the best way for unbanked South Africans to get banked.
Absolutely. They are adding 3,500 customers per day. Wow. They now have 130,000 from 80,000 2 weeks ago.
Amazing.
When we spoke about it.
Sure.
Their break even is 2 million clients. Their uptake is 3 times faster than they thought it would be, and their deposit taking is 4 times bigger than they thought it would be. I mean, this is your next Capitec on steroids.
That's phenomenal.
Amazing. And it's because, you know, that there's going to be a war now on banking prices, which it's about time too, quite frankly. Yeah.
All right. While we're on banks, Rand Merchant Holdings.
Yeah. So they own 34% of First Rand. They're, again, the investment holding company. They did okay, but not spectacular. You know, it's about – their property portfolio is about worth about R1 billion in normalized earnings. Revenue grew by 7%. It's okay. You know, it's not great. But I think what was interesting about Rand Merchant Holdings is that they say they're diversifying their portfolio or their income streams, really. Before, they used to be financials, and you know they also own West Bank and all that. They now want to move into what they call digitally oriented firms. So it'll be interesting to see what they are going to be buying. But that's where their focus is.
All right. Yeah. And PricewaterhouseCoopers report on Steinhoff was finally revealed this week.
Yes, and I was not going to read 3,000 pages, so I waited for the 10-page quick sticks.
I mean, what's the basic story here? Because we already know there was crookery afoot. Marcus Huerster and his compatriots had basically conspired to make a false balance sheet.
Yeah. Pretty much exactly that. Irregular transactions with 8 of their firms. So, you know, Steinhoff invested offshore, and I think this is where the problems were, you know, where they started. So think mattress firm, Conforama, those companies. So in the US, in France, in Europe, in Eastern Europe. 6.5 billion euros worth of irregular transactions, in inverted commas. And basically what they did was lied about income. So when these companies that they'd bought were not making money, they actually lied. it's that simple, really. They created assets and profits. They overstated assets. They made it up. They literally made it up.
So what happens now? Do people go to jail?
Marcus Huerster has declined the interview from PwC. I mean, I didn't know if he was allowed to do that.
This guy, how can he still be at large?
I don't know.
I mean, how is he allowed to continue?
Is he walking free?
Yeah. This guy has almost single-handedly, he and his co-conspirators, have sunk billions in investments.
Billions.
People's hard-earned pensions, people's hard-earned savings. He played with this like it was, like he was Nero fiddling while Rome burned.
And it wasn't a mistake or an error. It was intentional. They were forged documents.
Right.
So now we know the truth.
So surely there's got to be a price there.
Yeah, I would say. And now we wait for him to get arrested.
We'll hold our breath. So it all goes to the National Office of Public Prosecutions, the National Director of Public Prosecutions.
I don't actually know where it goes from.
I would imagine so. Yeah, she's the one who has to decide who gets prosecuted. All right. Thank you, Anthea.
It's a pleasure.
Cool. There's Anthea to start you off on a Monday. Lots to think about. Let's turn our attention to Sia and see what he's got in Said by Sia.
This is cool. There's humble and then there's this guy.
So rather than keeping $250,000, this is the sum of money that he was awarded as a Nobel laureate, this college professor has decided to rather give the money to his students. Jeez.
Oh. Wow.
I don't know.
I didn't have teachers like that in my day.
So his name is George Smith. He's a professor of biology at the University of Missouri, and he was awarded the 2018 Nobel Prize for Chemistry back in December. So the award came with a cool $250,000 prize, which Smith is now using to launch the Missouri Nobel Scholarship Fund for students who attend the college. And furthermore, this is even cooler. In show of gratitude and solidarity with the professor, the university is further adding $300,000 to the scholarship fund as well. So out of his kindness, there are now so many other students who will be able to benefit from this. The chancellor of the university actually says that he will be launching a new university tradition in which the school will donate another $100,000 for every faculty member who wins a Nobel Prize, with Smith being the first. Hashtag no pressure to anyone else who follows after that.
But, yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Is he following in someone else's footsteps, or is he creating a really scary new trend for future winners?
It really is no pressure to anyone else there.
Yeah, because now they're all going to, anyone keeps their money, everyone's going to go, oh, right. Oh, okay.
You know, that's Sam Smith kept his money.
George Smith. The Chancellor says, time and time again, we have been overwhelmed by George's incredible, humble attitude. And today we are amazed that he's even further by his spirit of generosity. Gifts such as these make it possible for more students to attend our university and have the experience of being taught by other world-class faculty. So George Smith was given the Nobel Prize in recognition for his work in a process that allows researchers to easily screen and harvest molecules for attacking bacteria.
Huh.
Wow, quite fancy. The method is now utilized in labs all around the world, but because he's just the definition of humility, Smith just says, he's delighted that, you know, he receives his recognition, but just another day at the office. No? And the fact that all he wanted out of the university in proper recognition was that they just give him a parking space. He lives less than 2 kilometers away from the university, and he cycles to and from work every single day, and says, getting a parking space is more than enough.
All right.
And he says, money, not really a thing. Make sure that more kids get to go to school, and then I'm happy. So kudos to you, 77-year-old Professor George Smith, who's given away his Nobel Prize earnings to students who rather will be able to benefit from more schooling. That's it said by Sia for this Monday morning.
Fantastic. Thank you, Sia. All right, I hope your day is off to a good start. We are here to keep you company and look after you between now and 9. We've got a special guest popping in a little bit later on. I think you're going to like him. You probably know him, if you're aware of South African comedy at its best. So he's coming up in a little while. I'm not going to give away too much. Stick around for that and a whole lot more. CliffCentral.com. It is Monday.
This is CliffCentral.com.